Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Weekend Wrap, brought to you, obviously, by Crowcast. I'm joined here by a cast of thousands who will be giving us their view on the disaster that occurred on the weekend. I'm welcoming Macca, Pete, and American Crow all the way from Cleveland. Well, a bit to talk about tonight, so we'll just very quickly flick through the weekend's results and then we'll get straight into it. Friday night we had the Power mopping up a pretty dismal Hawks, 13 goals 20-98 to Hawthorn 7 goals 5-47. Even then, the margin probably flattered Hawthorn a bit, and the Power travelling alright at the moment. On Saturday we had the Suns getting up over West Coast. The Suns 11 goals 14-80, defeating West Coast 11-11-77 by 3 points. West Coast just can't travel. We had the Giants 18 goals 9-1-1-7, defeating Essendon 15-11-101. The Giants just managing to keep winning despite having a lengthy injury list and have now usurped us at the top of the table. We also had North Melbourne, after a bright start, just caving in over Richmond. Richmond 14 goals 17-101 to North 9 goals 12-66. Actually thought North were all over them early, and then they just decided to go home early. This afternoon, Collingwood defeating Fremantle Dockers, who just refused to win that game. Collingwood 15-15-105 to Fremantle 12 goals 13-85. A win for the Magpies away once again. They're quite good on the road. It's good just to see teams crack in, really, isn't it? Despite, you know, whether they're good or not. And obviously the game that we're all concerned about tonight. Another bloodbath down at Cardinia Park. The scoreline flattering Adelaide in the end. Geelong 13 goals 18-96 to Adelaide 10 goals 14-74. Margin of only 22 points, but really it was all over at halftime. How'd it look like from Cleveland, AC?
Home and at other fields. I mean, it isn't just in Geelong. It's inexcusable to me that the team leadership, and putting aside the coaching for a second, it's inexcusable to me that Tex and the rest of the team leadership cannot somehow match the intensity and the effort and the just want to that these other top teams have. And we don't. And we can beat sides that are as a can out talent them. But when we match up against teams like Geelong, it's almost like they sit and watch the game around them. And it happens more than just at Geelong. It happens on a consistent basis. And I, you know, from my view, I'm as furious as everybody else because I'm tired of watching the same thing every time.
Well, AC, you were probably one of the more optimistic through our previous tough losses. And it's good to see that you've joined the dark side, mate. my comment...
Well, you know, I mean, I just... I was willing to give them the benefit of the doubt because, you know, obviously 2 years ago we had what we went through as a team and a unit. I thought they had grown from that, and I thought that there was that they had learned to develop that killer instinct. But I mean, clearly they have not.
No, my only comment is that we just lost it at contested ball. Everything else that flows from that, if we win contested ball, then we're in the game. Our whole game relies on contested ball, and there's other peripheral things that that happened that you can point the finger at, and rightly so. But we break even or win at the coalface, and we're in the game. And I just do not understand how a team of competitive beasts who are professional can rock up to a game of football at a place where they haven't won for 6,000 years and not want to just draw a line in the sand and go, enough is enough, particularly when they're on top of the table. We are the ladder leaders. We are the competition leaders. If ever there was an opportunity for us to stamp our authority on this competition this year, in a year that is wide open, that was it. And it was so disappointing, not only from the players, but also from the coaching staff, that we may as well have been watching last year's game and the year before that's game, the game against Sydney in the semi-final, all those big matches, we capitulate exactly the same way.
Correct. AC raised an excellent point about the leadership, and I'm going to really give Tex Walker a bloody verbal hiding. He was disgusting, absolutely disgusting. He's supposed to be the leader, and he's playing from behind, he's pushing them in the back, giving away free kicks, and at times looking disinterested, missing easy shots for goal. I mean, he ends up with 3-goal-3, but it's just, as leadership goes, it's setting an example. Look at the example that Selwood set. Look at the example that Dangerfield set. And then we've got the example that Tech set. Bloody terrific, isn't it?
Well, they're in awe of Dangerfield, and I'm tired of that. I mean, that's getting old real fast. We've played him 3 times now, and it's like, hey, pal, do whatever you want, wherever you want. That's got to end, and that comes from the leadership. That's the team leadership. They sit around, and they're in awe of these guys.
I think one of the things that concerns me greatly, and AC, you brought up about how we seem to go to water in the big games, and so far this year, two of the losses to Melbourne and North Melbourne, it's probably highly likely that Melbourne and the Kangaroos won't even play finals this year. I'd be surprised if either of those teams play finals. And the issue is that any team that brings, you know, the terminology, brings the heat, brings tackling, brings intensity, and if they can do that as a team, you know, 22 guys right across the ground, then we just capitulate. We don't like it. We don't like getting down and dirty. And we just, you know, and I know that I've repeated this ad nauseum, but when we are faced with that situation, we do not have anybody that can get their hands on the ball, and we just don't. And the same thing happened in the first quarter on Friday night, is that, guys, if you looked at the stats, I mean, they were absolutely horrific. I think by three-quarter time, we had 2 players over 15 disposals at three-quarter time, and that was both the Crouch boys. It was an appalling display of getting your hands on the footy when there was heat in the kitchen, and this is the common thread that goes through all of these performances. It doesn't have to be one of the bigger clubs. It just has to be a team that's prepared on that day, 22 players, to get together and bring whole of ground, whole of team pressure, and we do not have anybody prepared to put their hands on the football.
Yep, 100% right. But surely that comes back to begin with the leadership. Somebody's got to set the example. I mean, Selwood looked like a bloody warrior, doesn't he? He goes in there and he gets bashed in the head, got blood on the side of his head. He's off the ground for about 3 minutes. They go whack, 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 whack with a bloody stapler. And he's back in there like a bloody warrior setting an example. His men would dare not follow that example.
Yep. PJ raises a really good point on the chat. We had 2 of the top 15 possession getters at halftime, which was a very similar sort of statistic to the Sydney semi. And I'll just use that as a segue into some head-to-head stats here before we continue with the commentary. Kicks and handballs, we got smashed by 108 disposals, all up 429 to Geelong, 321 to Adelaide. I mean, based on our output that this season, that's unheard of. We had 92 marks, Geelong 60, Adelaide, which will be explained in a moment a little bit further. We only just out-tackled them, even though they had the ball for, let me just see, I had this up a minute ago, 49% time in possession to our 34%, and yet we only out-tackled them by 5. Source won the hit-outs, but it really didn't do us any good. He didn't seem to be able to hit in the right spots, or our players at the drop weren't getting to the right positions. Frees were even, although I thought the umpiring, particularly in the first half, was a little diabolical. What else do we have here? Disposals per goal. Both teams were pretty inefficient. Geelong, 33 disposals per goal. Us, 32. The difference there is that Geelong were using the ball. They had massive amount of uncontested possessions, whereas ours was basically due to repeat inside 50s. We weren't very efficient in terms of getting inside 50 and scoring. And that's shown out in the inside 50s per scoring shot. Geelong were 1.6, we were 2.1. We had 51 inside 50s to 52, so we had the ball in there enough statistically, but if you look at the quality of the entries, they were chalk and cheese. Ours were very shallow and rushed, whereas theirs were far more considered. Contested possessions is where we got smashed. It ended up being 164 to 130. But I think at half time we had a 40 something differential in contested possessions up to half time, which just isn't going to win you a game. Uncontested possessions, 265 to 177. As I mentioned, once Geelong got the ball, they were quite prepared to use it by hand and foot. To clear space, make the ground wide, and then effectively go forward. They had 318 effective disposals to 218, so that's 74% to 60, what's that, 68%. They beat us in marks inside 50, whereas we tend to win that stat when we win. Clearances were even, although again, I'd love to know the efficiency of those clearance numbers. They had more rebound 50s than us, 37 to 32, and that's pretty much the tail of the tape. For me, the two key stats there, contested ball and uncontested possessions.
No argument about that. They are the key factors and very key factors. But so far, we haven't got onto the coaching staff.
No, we'll get there, Macca. We'll get there.
Because I really want to stick my boot right up their ass as well.
Absolutely.
Because if you you mentioned the contested possessions, and also if you mentioned the scoreboard, at one stage we were nearly 8 goals behind. And then they had the mighty brainwave. Finally had the brainwave. Let's have 6 forwards instead of 5.
Yeah, let's match them up forward. Yeah. Wasn't that a novel idea? And let's put Luke Brown on bloody Joel Selwood finally. Wasn't that a novel idea?
And then you know what happened after that? We outscored them for the rest of the game.
That's right.
Yeah, but I'd be a little careful on that. I mean, the fourth quarter especially, Geelong was just doing enough to get through the game. It was 22 points, but Jesus, they could have really waxed us.
Yeah, but you say that, AC, but the point is they were cruising and they got up to 8 goals. They could have made it 16 goals if we'd kept on with only 5 forwards.
Well, that's true too. But, I mean, Geelong put it on cruise control. So, you know, we outscored them the rest of the way, but, you know, they'd already done enough to win that.
Yeah, well, I thought Luke Brown did a very good job on Selwood too once he went there.
They moved him off again after like 10 minutes or so.
You can't have a man winning his position, can you?
What I really enjoyed, Macca, and Pete, I'll let you get a word in a moment. What I really enjoyed was when the game was there to be won in the first quarter, and we were obviously losing contested possessions, and, you know, looking like going down the same path that we had previously, we decided to, as you mentioned, not man up down, but down up forward. We decided to have Rory Sloan and Eddie Betts off for a 9-minute stretch in that first quarter. Our best midfielder and our most dangerous forward off the ground for 9 minutes, halfway through the first quarter when we were actually trying to wrestle control of the match. What the actual hell makes that happen? That is ridiculous.
Oh, and the other ridiculous thing, just there's another point I want to make, but I'll just follow that up with the third quarter when Walker kicked an almighty goal from the boundary line of 50 metres out. And there's only a couple of minutes to go in the quarter, 2 or 3 minutes to go in the quarter, you know, and, you know, we had a little bit of momentum at that stage. I think that had got us back down to within maybe 20 out of 29 points or something like that. And he goes off.
Yeah.
You know, the captain who's just kicked a team lifting goal and who's your key forward, because of this incessant need to rotate players off the ground once they've kicked a goal, and he goes off for the last, you know, 2 or 3 minutes of the third quarter. It's just, I just think there just seems to be no thought process behind it at all. I did want to just give a shout out to a performance I was really, really impressed with, and that was Huey Greenwood.
Yeah.
Really loved his game. 18 possessions, 11 tackles, and 9 clearances. I thought he was just terrific. And yeah. He showed, it's only his third game, and he's just such a big body out there.
Yeah.
And he shows some really quite nice finesse as well with his hands and getting the ball out of stoppage situations. He was a real highlight for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
He embarrassed some of our so-called senior players who got absolutely bugger all the ball and no contested balls. Greenwood was fantastic, absolutely fantastic. And he's going to be a real player for the future.
Equal second highest contested possessions for the game, and he had 65% time on ground, Macca. And he spent large portions of the game up forward as well. I reckon he probably only spent 50% of his time, if that, in the midfield, and I agree with both of you. He's a gun. He's a rose amongst thorns at the moment. And, you know, Pete, just following up on what you're saying about Tex, not only was it a team lifting goal, but it was a lifting goal for Tex as well. You know, he'd missed a couple. He needed to put that one through. He put it through. It was a fist-pumping moment. And you could tell on his face how annoyed he was that he was getting called off. And if I was him, I would have said, stuff you guys, I'm the captain, I'm staying out here. And it just smacks of a club and a group that is so rigid in terms of what they have to do and when they have to do it, that there's just no feel for the moment and the situation. Very disappointing. Anyway, let's get into some individual stats. And we had the two Crouch boys leading possession winners, Brad with 28, 11 kicks, 17 handballs, 7 tackles, 4 inside 50s, 10 contested possessions, but he had 7 clangers and only went at 60% disposal efficiency, 5 clearances. I felt he did a lot of his work when the game was lost, to be honest. Matt, on the other hand, I thought was quite good. 14 kicks, 13 handballs for 27. He took 2 marks, 5 tackles, 6 inside 50s, 13 contested possessions, which is up on his output over recent weeks.
Yeah, Matt would have been our best player up to three-quarter time. He tied in the last quarter, but I thought he was fantastic in the first three quarters.
Yeah, him and Snake. Matt also had 7 clearances. I felt like he was trying, and I also felt that his kick-to-handball ratio is what we want. Often in those pressure games, Matt, you know, reverts to handballing, but his metres gained stat was all right. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was certainly better than Brody Smith. Sloaney got sat on. Sorry, go on, Pete.
No, keep going, mate. You're up.
I was going to say, yeah, we'll whiz through a few. Sloaney got sat on, but still did okay. 23 touches, 7 tackles, 6 inside 50s, 11 contested possessions, 6 clearances. Of the rest, really, Lynchy did all right. Worked hard for 20 touches, 4 inside 50s, and a couple of goals. Sorry, did he have a couple of goals? Yeah, 2 goals too. Huey Greenwood, we've already mentioned. The 12 kicks, 6 handballs for 18. 11 tackles, if you don't mind. 11 contested possessions. So he's absolutely smashed it in tackles. He's 4 better than the next best, Brad Crouch. And there's plenty of numbers there, 5 or less in our team. And he's had 11 tackles, 11 contested possessions. Disposal efficiency a bit down, but although I felt that he was good by hand, maybe not so good by foot. 9 clearances as well. The lad just has to be in our midfield rotation. If the coaches need any more proof, then I don't know what's going on. Go on.
No, no, that's all right. I'll jump in. When you finish, mate, I'll jump in.
Jake Lever, I thought, was probably, with Matt Crouch, our best player. Only had the 14 touches, but took 6 fantastic intercept marks. Only laid the 1 tackle, 1 inside 50. 7 contested possessions, went 100% disposal efficiency, which is good, and 6 rebound 50s, which was a team high. Sorry, apart from Lady, who had 7. But Jake never gives up trying, and he'd be a bit dark. Betts was quiet. Tex, even though he scored some goals, I felt very similar to you, Macca. His body language, his contesting, and his second efforts just aren't there at the moment. Luke Brown was quiet, although I did feel that he had an effect on Joel Selwood, although Joel Selwood, when you give him a bit of momentum in a game, it's very hard then to go put a tag on him. I would have loved to have seen Luke Brown start on him, or Jake Kelly for that matter. The absentees. People are raving a bit about Charlie Cameron. He only had 8 touches, and what's happened to rotating Cameron through the middle? Because I hardly saw him through the middle. Saw him maybe once or twice off the back of the square. Didn't see Eddie off the back of the square. What the hell has happened to that tactic? Kyle Hardigan had a mare. Andy Otten had a mare. Brodie Smith had a mare. Eddie Betts was very quiet. David McKay doesn't deserve to play another game for the club. Miller was quiet. Atkins was disgustingly quiet and insipid in his approach. Rory Atkins needs to start going when it's his turn to go. The thing I don't know, I'll finish off here and you guys can have a crack. The thing I don't like about Rory Atkins is that when he's
with Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's the guy chasing the ball carrier. He doesn't put any physical pressure on the ball carrier. He just corrals them and then makes a half-hearted attempt to smother the kick or handball. He just needs to put some physical pressure on when he's chasing. Anyway, over to you guys.
Right, I've been saving this one up, so I'll just go back to the Crouch brothers. I've really come to a point, I think, I'm comfortable now. I've formed a view in my own mind about the Crouch brothers, and that's that they really are second string midfielders. They are not midfielders that you can that are going to carry the club to any kind of ultimate success. That's not a I suppose that is a criticism, but less of Matt Crouch, because I don't think he ever really came to us as a first-grade midfielder. No. I think that he's a third or fourth-grade midfielder, and I read something on social media today which I thought was quite interesting when someone said, the great thing about Matt Crouch is that he always turns up, and then the response was, well, yeah, it is true. He does always turn up, but then that just shows that his influence is just not good enough, because we still get these results whether he turns up or not.
Yep.
So
never
that's
been
Matt
tagged
I think,
in his life, Pete.
No, and I think no, absolutely right. And I think and the other thing is, and I think that I'm settled now with Matt Crouch. He's a second grade midfielder. We're never going to get success if we've only got Rory Sloane and Matt Crouch as leading the midfield. And I think that really Brad Crouch, I think he's looking to me as though he's a third to fourth grade midfielder. He's really a very 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 ordinary footballer. Gets a lot of the ball, but he really has no influence on the game whatsoever. Now, I don't know whether it's just the fact that he's been crueled with injuries or what it is, but I think that we're all waiting, this thing of waiting for Brad Crouch to get back and be this megastar. And I think that there will come a point in time when we have to actually realise that he's just not that player. He's a third-string midfielder at best. The only other thing I was going to say about Huey Greenwood is that they've just got to, with him, they really just have to work on his tank, because obviously that's the problem at the moment, is his fitness and his ability aerobically to be able to run through the midfield. If they can just, over the next 12 months, get that tank up and so that he can play midfield minutes full-time, then he'll be an excellent player for us. But they've really got to look at, I'm just getting to that stage where you think, can you really play both the Crouchers in the same team? Because you just get two players who are just racking up ineffective disposal after ineffective disposal with all of these, pathetic little backyard handballs that they do. And, Matt Crouch has got much better at that. I think, what did he have, 14 and 13? I've got a lot more faith in Matt than I ever will in Brad. Brad just consistently racks up, numbers like, 10 and 18 or, 11 and, 15 or, and it's all ineffective stuff that just gets us nowhere. And they do not have any kind of influence on the game whatsoever. So anyway, that's my piece on those two. Eggs in the Greenwood basket, but really, Brad Crouch, he's a massive disappointment.
Yep. What about your boy, Rory Atkins, Pete?
Yeah, look, I think all of that criticism is fair of Rory. I think I will say this in his defence and in the defence of Brody Smith and a couple of guys like that is that how those guys play, and Miller as well, how those guys play is, generally speaking, quite a result of how the midfield generally plays. So you've got those guys there to play outside midfield minutes. Now, I know what you're saying, but it's got to be, when it's their turn to go, and I agree with that, and I'm not going to take opposition to that at all, because I think that he doesn't attack the body hard enough, and he needs to, and I think that that's true. But the problem is that when you're getting absolutely butchered on the inside of the contest, these guys like Atkins, Miller, and even Brody Smith, they're just not going to get much of the ball, and they don't win their own ball. Now, you can, that can be a criticism as well, but they're not setting up around the contest to be winning the inside ball. They're setting up to be used as outside runners. And when we are on top in contested possession, then Atkins is playing well. So I will make that excuse for him, that he is a little bit reliant. He's a second, third in line, and he is reliant upon those at the coalface to do their job. And when that's not being done, then they can end up being starved, those guys. But with all that said, no argument that his attack on the body is poor.
Just on your comments, Pete, I have to agree with you, Brad Crouch. He is a very major disappointment, given what we paid for to get him and given what he looked like being when he first started. Whether his injuries have made him what he is today, I don't know, and whether he will come good, I don't know. But what we're getting is certainly very second-rate or third-rate. Matty Crouch, I see him... if you draw a graph of his performance, Pete, it's definitely on the rise. And I'm not saying that he's he's not in the category of the really big boys, but he is a player of the future who will actually always give you a very honest performance.
I agree with that. I agree with that, Matt. There's no question with that. I'm much more on the Matt Crouch bandwagon than Brad. And I think that you're right. He will always give that honest contest. He'll always turn up. He'll always get his hands on the ball. I just think we have to move away from thinking that
he needs class around him.
Form some kind of combination with Rory Sloan and be a premiership winning midfield.
Remember Roger James in Port's premiership midfield?
Yes, I do. That's very good.
That's what Matt Crouch reminds me of. He's Roger James around, with class around him. You need that cold faced player. He's never going to win a Brownlow or take a tag or anything like that. But he's a distributor and he's honest and he'll give you a contest more often than not. He needs to build himself up around not getting pushed off the ball at stoppages. But you kind of got faith that Matt's going to give the best he can. Sorry, Macker, I cut you off. Please go on.
Yeah, actually, you mentioned a player there of the past for it, Roger James. I regard him very, very highly as a player. Actually, he was a beautiful distributor of the ball. Moving on, I just wanted to disagree slightly with Pete, not totally, but slightly with Pete, about Atkins and Smith. I'm not going to give them any defence whatsoever, because the players they were standing just bread and butter players, and they prepared to have their colours lowered and get thrashed by bread and butter players, and I don't find that acceptable at all. And when we're going well, yes, these boys are firing and looking good, and I know they're outside players, but you've also got to accept the fact that you're standing a man as well. There's an opponent. If your opponent's doing very well, then it's your job to do something about it, and I just don't think they do enough about it.
They certainly didn't run hard defensively. The amount of uncontested ball that Geelong got points to our outside players not working hard enough off the ball. And I just want to touch on a point that PJ raised in the chat, and there's been a bit of discussion about this issue and a few others on Big Footy this weekend. Our actual game plan is set up to have our outside runners really feeding off our inside players. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, the whole cornerstone of our game plan is winning ground ball, winning contested possession. And we've set up so that guys like Brodie Smith and Rory Atkins and, you know, Wayne Miller and those blokes will feed off our contested possession advantage. And I think that's why we look so bad and lose so badly when our contested possessions are down, because we don't have a game plan that can counter a negative contested possession differential. And it makes those outsiders look really bad. But by the same token, Macca, I'm with you. There's got to be a bit of game awareness. And if you know that we're getting towed up, you need to step up. And just because you're a quick player who receives the ball and distributes, it doesn't give you a pass when it comes time to put your body on the line or gut run to a contest or block up space or do all the little 1% things that footballers need to do. And I think that's where our outside players are really lacking. It's their defensive efforts and their willingness to work hard when things aren't going their way.
Correct. Absolutely. That's where I was coming from. And one question I'd like to ask Pete, because he's not usually around when we've had this discussion, and I know that Phoenix and I both think we can't understand the club not going after a bloke like Rockliffe. What do you think of Rockliffe, Pete?
Oh, I think I was very vocal last year that we should have got him. There was never any doubt in my mind they should have gone after him. Absolutely not. No, I mean they desperately needed a player like him, and I think that it's now being shown. And I think the error in not picking up Bryce Gibbs is now being shown, where we've put stock into, in particular, the Crouch brothers to assist Rory Sloan, and we are short. And I think what happened, you know, we all thought at the start of the year that we were short in the midfield, and then, you know, we had a couple of some good wins against some teams who weren't terribly organised, and you know, everyone was getting excited about organic growth. And I think that really, you know, what we're seeing against, you know, the teams like Geelong and teams that, as I said, bring the heat, bring the pressure. And this happened, you know, this goes back to last year, is that we do not have a single player, and Rory Sloan included, a single player that when the heat is being brought and when the game, you know, when the other team is running in, you know, like an avalanche, we have no players who can get their hand on the ball and put their, you know, and basically put their hands up and say, I'm turning this back the other way. We don't have that player. We don't have that player who can rest momentum and do something to keep us in the game. Once we're like turtles. Once we're gone, once we're back in the shell, then that's it. It's finished. It's all over. And now you could see on Friday night in the first 10 minutes, it was all over. There was never any doubt in my mind. So absolutely, in answer to your question, yes, should have thrown the sink at Rockliffe. Yes, should have thrown the sink at Gibbs. Two years ago, picking up, you know, the what it's looking like now, picking up Duday instead of Burton, that's looking really bad.
Picking up Gallucci instead of Power Pepper.
you know, those decisions now are looking not so much Jordy Galucha. I've seen some good things from him, and all reports he played pretty well on Saturday as well. So I'm not prepared to write him off.
I'm not writing off Galucha, Pete.
And he's a midfielder, you know, and so we need him. You know, we need a hard running midfielder, but you know, Dida is a he's not morphed into I think there was that. Sorry, and this might just be a little bit off track, but this is just until we raise the issue of players being bought in. I think that, you know, D-Day comes in, we think, oh, you know, surely they're not going to spend a first rounder on a third defender. And you know, oh, maybe he's actually going to, you know, morph into a midfielder or something like that, you know, and he's going to be some super. Well, he's not. He's playing decent footy as a third defender in the Sandfall, and it really looks like he's just sitting there waiting for, you know, trying to get to the front of the queue of the whole lot of other third defenders that we've got. You know, and in the meantime, Burton is just absolutely tearing the AFL apart, you know, for a first-year player, and it's just looking like a really, really bad decision.
Dumb decision. Absolutely dumb.
I wasn't knocking Galucci, Pete, by any stretch, but Power Pepper, given that we didn't do anything at trade week and we were clearly a solid defender short, Power Pepper is a ready-made man-child who could play from round one, and he has missed a game so far this season, was surely a better prospect for what we needed than Galucci.
I see what you're saying.
Notwithstanding that Galucci is probably going to be a good honest midfielder. I don't think he'll be. He doesn't look like a star, but he looks like a B plus to A grade midfielder down the track.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, mate.
Yeah, one thing I said at the beginning of the season before we started, I saw no premiership in Adelaide because of its midfield, and we started to get deluded a little bit after about six games, but being honest and looking at what we've got there, we are that star midfielder short.
Yeah, and look, the theme of this show should really be we shouldn't be surprised, because this is exactly where we all said we would be.
Yeah,
so this is no surprise. This is exactly what we thought would happen, that we would get towed up by teams with strong midfields. And, you know, it's a discussion probably for Tuesday night, because, you know, we want to keep focus on the game as much as possible. So I will sort of pin the broader discussion for a bigger discussion on Tuesday night. And I'm thinking, over the bye, we're going to have a nice old review podcast where we can talk about these things even more. But everything is right. We're here exactly where we thought we would be as a supporter base. And it just defies logic to try and understand why the club didn't see it as well. Speaking of the club, though, I want to go back to some coaching decisions or coaching non-decisions. We touched on them briefly, but I'd like to expand. And I'd like to open up the discussion by posing the question that if you see that we're getting done in a key stat, ground ball, if you see that differential dropping into the negative early, why as a coaching group do you not try and influence the contest and stop momentum? Why don't you man up forward? Why don't you flood their forward line? What, you know, play three or four back? Why wasn't anything done?
Yeah, that's what gets me, because when we did do something about it, eventually when the game was well and truly lost, then and I know that AC said that Geelong put off the pedal a little bit, and they may have a little bit, but having said that, it doesn't deny the fact that it went from nearly eight goals back to under four. So, I'm totally with you, Phoenix. You don't keep doing what's failing.
There was a key moment in the early in the second quarter where it started to blow out really sharply after we'd sort of hung in there for the first quarter. And I would have thought the coaching staff would have thought at quarter time, all right, we're going to just let this flow just for a minute or two longer. But if it gets ugly, we're going to change things up. We could have shut that game down and frustrated the hell out of Geelong for two quarters by crowding the contest, chucking numbers behind the ball, disrupting, you know, causing mismatches, the whole thing, and then had a run at them at the last quarter when Geelong are out on their feet trying to get through a massive flood. you know, notwithstanding the fact that we didn't tag Geelong, tag Selwood at the start or man up forward, the inaction by our coaching box when it was very clear to everyone watching within the 20 minutes and certainly within 5 minutes of after quarter time, we were going to get done the same way. And for the coaching staff just to allow the team to get done the same way without doing anything to change it or to halt momentum or to change the manner in which the game was played, what are we paying these guys hundreds of thousands of dollars for? Why? What value are they bringing to the team?
Well, I think you're identifying, when you say coaching staff, to me, it starts with Pike. And so one of the questions that you're raising, and it's a good question maybe to kick around, is perhaps he's not a good in-game manager of the game. That he, you know, we've pointed out that Tex kicks a goal and the system calls for Tex to come off and he comes off. So maybe the issue here is that Pike is not well equipped against some of these better teams to be an in good game coach and make these adjustments and to identify that, okay, we went into the week thinking ABC, but now we got to change it up a little bit because the reality of the situation is different. So maybe, you know, maybe this is a head coaching issue.
I see. Yeah. Sorry, Mac. I just want to extend this point with AC for a second. I made an analogy on the board over the weekend, or not an analogy, a comparison between Aussie rules and NFL. And to me, NFL is a sport where the coach and the coaching staff are heavily involved in what goes on the field. You know, they are the chess masters, so to speak, and the players are well drilled in plays and you know, you'll get quarterbacks that can play call, but you'll also get teams that rely very heavily on play calls from the sidelines. Do you think, from watching both games, do you think that's a big difference between Aussie rules and NFL?
It does seem to be. I mean, I understand that AFL is a different game. It's more free-flowing. It's probably harder to micromanage like some of the NFL coaches do. However, that being said, you can still make in-game adjustments. You can still identify that there's areas you need to shore up or things you need to switch around. And perhaps Pike is just too slow at that. Maybe the game's too quick for him to readily adjust on the flow. I mean, the big thing in the NFL, you know, Phoenix, is second half adjustments.
Yep.
And to Mac's point, they did make adjustments, but he still, even with the adjustments he made, he still held rigidly to the notion that, well, our system calls for guys to come on and off at certain points. And that's a situation, and I think Pete said it and you said it, that was a situation where you have momentum, you have to seize that opportunity. And he just didn't do it.
Mm.
Now, I just want to say something about that, though, and drill down further, because I think you're onto a very good point. But it's not necessarily just Pike alone here we're talking about, because no senior coach can do the job on his own on game day. He's got his line coaches who are responsible for various areas of the game.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I would think it's his call overall to reverse the game plan. Or is that the role of the line coaches to reverse the game plan?
No, that's the head coach. The buck stops where, right? I mean, it's the head coach. He's got to make that call.
Right, that's where I'm going to. Well, you're only reinforcing what I was about to say. But I don't see him in deep discussion with his line coaches to talk about what they're going to do.
No, that's right. Sorry, go on, Pete.
Boys, I was going to say I'm about to bail on this for tonight, and two final comments. One, the Pike reset doesn't seem to be a thing. And as I say goodbye, I just wanted to a very, very special guest here to say hello. There was an under-9s match this morning, and in a game that they had absolutely no right to win, a whole lot of defensive pressure kept a very, very low-scoring game. And this champion turned the game on its head by kicking 2 goals in a quarter. So say hello, mate.
Hi.
Little Pete,
superstar.
Great start, mate.
I had to give him a go because he's been listening the whole 45 minutes, so he loves his footy.
Well done, enjoy the rest of the
podcast, and I'll duck out, and I'll see you on Tuesday.
See you Tuesday night, mate. Cheers, mate. I really, and Macca, to that point, you see that, like, my impression, and I could be far off track here, but my impression is that the line coaches are there to manage the tactics, the strategies, and the matchups that are decided amongst the coaching group. But in terms of being able to impact the play, impact the game, and call for a different structure or a different setup, that's got to be Pike. Pike has got to be able to say to his line coaches, all right, I want X, Y, Z to happen. You know, I want us to clear out our forward line and chuck 2 behind the ball. You know, I want us to change up our matchups in the midfield, etc., etc., etc. And you're dead set right, Macca. It's a very good observation that whenever the camera does pan to Pikey, he's sitting off to the side. He's very isolated. I think the guy next to him is actually his stats man. And he seems to operate independent of the line coaches on game day. And there doesn't seem to be a hell of a lot of communication between each of the coaches. And, you know, it seems a very autocratic sort of an atmosphere. And who knows? We're only looking from the outside. But my biggest beef is that we're paying these guys, these master tacticians, these head coaches, mountains of money. And I don't really see what value they add on game day, because quite frankly, anyone could go out with a list of bloody training drills during the week. They only have one main session a week. The rest is all rehab and sports science and, you know, psychology and all the rest of it. They only have one main session a week. And I reckon the three of us could go out and run that session without, you know, causing any less damage.
I'm not going to argue for or against that because we might cause havoc, but...
Especially the American, he might have him kicking the wrong way, for God's sake.
Or throwing the down. Stop running it, you got to pass.
Exactly.
But, you know, I mean, I threw up two examples on Big Footy of a coach directly impacting the result. The first one was when Wallace was coaching Richmond, and he played us and decided that he wasn't going to let us get the ball. So he played keepings off for 4 quarters. Everyone thought it was disgusting and the death of football and all the rest of it. And yet he got the 4 points for Richmond. We lost we lost a game, and we didn't lose that many games that season.
The worst game to watch ever, that one, but they won the game.
They got the 4 points, didn't they, Macca? You know, it's about a coach imposing himself on the game with a tactic that may not win popularity contests, but certainly won that particular game. And the other one, of course, was the famous 97 grand final, Macca, where some genius decided to put an unheralded defender up forward in the first half, and then after the shock value of that wore off, he decided just to clear out in the second half and let an absolute champion work his magic up forward, and it won us a grand final.
Yeah, well, there was a genius behind that. A mad genius, but a genius behind that.
You know, well, and the thing is that they're both examples of coaches having a direct impact on the game. And, yes, they were, you know, overall strategies, although Malcolm's second half strategy was mid-game, whereas Wallace went into the game with that plan. But When the game needed to be shut down on Friday night, when you could see that they were starting to smack us around in close at the coalface, what we needed to do was actually start to turn the game ugly. We needed to shut it down. We needed to frustrate Geelong, to limit their scoring opportunities, to keep the game close so that come final quarter when the game's there to be won, we were in with a sniff. And then you open up the game, Geelong find it hard to adapt and you give yourself a chance. I just don't understand how something like that doesn't happen at professional level AFL football.
Well, it doesn't. I have seen it happen in other games, but not necessarily ours. But we seem to have this set pattern and we keep, and I understand it's good having faith in your game plan, but also the smart person also works out we're not going to win if we stick to it.
Yep. The other thing is obviously selection, guys. And look, I don't want to spend too much time on David McKay. I think we're all in agreement that nobody outside of Westlakes understands why David McKay is still getting selected. Am I wrong?
What do you think, AC?
Well, who are we saying we want to replace him with? That's always my question. And you guys know I don't follow the SANFL as closely as you guys do. I'm just not there, and I don't see those games. So my question to you is, who's his replacement? And then I would throw it to you. Why do you think that replacement's not up?
Yeah, can I just say one point? AC's got a very good point, and I think he's given the answer why he's still there. Because,
no, disagree.
Jordan
Glucci.
You're playing for the future rather than the present. But
No, you're not, because Jordan Glucci didn't do anything wrong in his debut game against Brisbane, and he certainly provides just as much in his short stint of AFL footy as David McKay has. And there was no reason for David McKay to be included in that side, irrespective of the fact that Kirtley Hampton got injured.
I agree with that point. I just don't want to burn somebody like Gallucci at this stage, that's all.
Look, he's a first-round draft pick, Macca. He needs to be able to cope with that kind of pressure.
Thin-bodied.
Did you see Patrick Dangerfield tackle D-Mac a couple of times? It was like he was tackling a piece of fairy floss. It was actually embarrassing.
Well, that may be, but Mac McKay wasn't the only one. I saw guys practically shepherding Dangerfield down the field. I mean, that as you know, I said it earlier, that nothing is irritating me more when we play Geelong than the deference that they give to a former teammate. And I, for one, am tired of it. And the first time that somebody knocks him on his ass, that will be the time that I know the team culture has changed and maybe for the better.
Yep,
good point.
And the glaring example of that is Bernie Vince versus Dangerfield when he was still with us. Bernie, AFC club favourite, mates with all the blokes, including Danger, and didn't bother Bernie. He got down and dirty on Dangerfield, got under his skin, and impacted the game to the extent that they beat us at home. And you're dead set right, AC. Why? You know the person that needed to run through Patrick Dangerfield? Tex Walker. If you ever wanted someone to make a statement about we're here to play football and we're here to win the game and we'll chat to you on Twitter afterwards, it was Tex bloody Walker. I'm the captain now. You don't belong here. We've come here to win. We're going to sit you on your ass, Patrick.
Big tick.
Yep. But going back to selection, though, D-Mac aside, our forward line looked terribly imbalanced. We had JJ, Otten, Tex as our three-pronged key position forwards or marking forwards. Not a lot of defensive pressure amongst those, and it really showed in terms of the way Geelong, notwithstanding the fact that they outnumbered us anyway, but the manner in which they were able to waltz out of our forward line more often than not was a real indictment on our selection.
Is this the time that we thank Otten for his performances so far and give Jono Beach a go?
Well, I don't think there's room for JJ and Otten in the same forward line. I think Otten was a good replacement when JJ was out, but he's not a like-for-like replacement for Mitch McGovern. Jono Beach is a far better option as a Mitch McGovern clone. He's good overhead. He's good at his feet. He's a physical performer. He doesn't mind getting involved physically, and he can play up the ground. And I reckon Jono Beach would have been the one. And you're right, Macca. Otten's played some very good minutes for us this season, and it's been fantastic to see him. But he's a backup player.
Yep, and I think Beach has definitely got to come into the side. And we don't know what's going to happen down back. You know, Otten may become a replacement down there. It depends how that ankle comes up.
Do, but even that scares me a little bit. Otten is a very good intercept marker, and if Jake doesn't come up, then you would think that would be the first call. But we're getting done over the back of contests, and the bloke that we're missing in that regard is Kyle Chaney, in my opinion. Kyle Chaney, just a good, honest player. But the one thing that Kyle was very good at was getting behind and being the last defender.
He was.
At the moment, we're just getting exposed over the back, and it doesn't help when Kyle Hardigan can't seem to make a positive effort on spoiling the ball, because he just let too many over the back on the weekend.
Geez, he was lobotomized again last week. I mean,
yeah, it wasn't good.
It's like they take his brain in and out week by week, or even during games. I thought he was terrible, actually.
Yeah, wasn't good. But look, I mean, let's get back to this election issue. I mean, if you're looking at Geelong, and we talked about it, Scorpus and I on Thursday night, their defence didn't look terribly terribly scary. There was only the two tolls to go with Jenkins and Walker, and we had a real opportunity to throw a different look at them with our forward setup and really try to stretch them a little bit with pace. Geelong aren't a fast side, and their defence certainly isn't fast. They move the ball all right, but they're not fast runners. But by going in so tall and slow, we seem to play into their hands, and perhaps it was our attempt at countering their extras behind the ball, giving ourselves some more marking options. But at the end of the day, it was just ineffective because, numbers won out.
Yeah, before the game started, I went through the lineups and looked at their team versus our team. And bear in mind, they've got Selwood and they've got Dangerfield. But apart from that, and when you looked at it and went totally man for man, we had more pluses than we had minuses.
Yep.
And I thought to myself, I know we're going to lose, because I did pick us to lose because of the way that I knew we'd play the way we did, and we repeated it as we always do.
Yep.
But having said that, on paper, we should be winning.
Yep. I felt like Otten and Jenkins, though. And I think the knock-on effect is something that you touched on at the beginning, and notwithstanding his attitude and body language, but I think Otten and Jenkins in our forward line actually has had an impact on Tex as well in terms of his output. I think Tex is struggling to find space, and he's clearly carrying something, because there was lots of talk about him being a late out, and Jono Beach was a travelling emergency, which is unusual not to take a running player as your travelling emergency. So clearly Tex was in doubt. So he's carrying something. It's a clogged up forward line. And I don't think the structure is doing him any favours, but he apparently isn't very happy about it because his body language is horrendous. I also don't understand why Cameron isn't getting more minutes in the midfield, Macca. I don't know whether you see it the same as I do, and AC, you can chime in here as well, obviously, but I didn't see Charlie around the contest very much. He played up on the wing a little bit, But what happened to running Charlie through the midfield? What happened to that?
No, that didn't happen. It did once. I remember once it did happen, but that was about it. I don't remember seeing Eddie do it at all. And that might be we missed it, but it certainly wasn't done as frequently as it's been done in the past.
No, and they actually did it with Guthrie a couple of times to better effect, and Guthrie's been putrid this year.
I hated that because he's been, as I said to my wife, he's been playing like a dog this year.
Yep.
And yet he was made to look good.
Yep. And he has a habit of doing that against us as well, Guthrie. But when you allow him to run off half back, you know, you got to ask the question: who was actually running with him? And that's where someone needed to be side by side. And the obvious one would have been Cameron, I would have thought. You know, we can have a crack at Kyle Hartigan and Daniel Talia. I didn't think either of them had great games.
No, Talia down there.
But Geelong had 19 scoring shots from their first 25 entries, Macca and AC, and only 4 of those scoring shots out of the 19 were from their key tools. There was 11 or 12 from their midfield brigade. So it just shows you where we were breaking down. And you and I both know Macca, and it's probably obvious to AC as well, that as a defender, particularly a tall defender, when your midfield are getting crunched, that you can be made to look very stupid.
Yeah, I understand that, and I think Talia was a bit of a victim of that. But I really was disappointed with Hartigan in the way he approached it. Even when he was thumping it, he was thumping it straight to them rather than where we had players.
It was very panicked.
There was little thought in it.
It was very panicked. Half the time, he would make a decision to go for the spoil, and his eyes would be closed, and it'd be a wild swing, and half the time, he'd miss it altogether. And it was very clear to me that they just cleared Daniel Talia out. They actually moved, from where I was looking, they actually moved Harry Taylor up the ground a bit more and cleared out their forward line and pretty much went through Hartigan's man all night, whether it was Hawkins or if there was a bit of a switch up and Hartigan was on someone else, they still went through Hartigan's man.
Well spotted. Well,
that's all right. I mean, Phoenix, you hit on it. They identified the weak spot and they absolutely exploited it. And you know, stating the obvious, as you guys have said, he played a stinker of a game, no question.
And Phoenix is on right of the money, actually, because I was kept thinking, why is Talia not in the play and why is it always Hartigan?
Yep, it became apparent to me in the second quarter that they were just playing through Hartigan the whole night. Their forward line was very open. They had, you know, one or two smalls running through there. They, you know, Daniel Mentor was through there. Nakai Cockatoo was running in there. A couple of others, but essentially their one key was Hawkins,
and that also feeds into what we were talking about with the coaching staff. I mean,
exactly.
Certainly, if we could see it, they could see it, and absolutely no help was given to Hartigan.
Exactly, and no one was getting behind the contest. They got 2 or 3 goals from the ball coming out the back. And that's where Kyle Chaney usually sits. If and not only that, but Chaney is usually the one to be that third man up. It's not usually Hartigan that does that. And I think Hartigan benefits very much from having a Lever or Chaney when he's playing coming in over the top. Chaney's quite good at it. And I do think, despite Jake Kelly putting in 110% every week, once Chaney is fit and it doesn't look like he's quite ready to go just yet, he needs to come back into the team, perhaps at Jake Kelly's expense. Although maybe Jake Kelly is our designated tagger, Macca.
I think that's exactly what he is.
He's certainly got mongrel and endurance.
He plays close, so he may well be quite good at that role.
Yeah, you know, you'd think that we need Seedsman back in the team because when we have Brody Smith tagged, we've got no other rebounding defender. Rory Laird is a distributor, but he's not a rebounding defender. Jake Kelly hasn't got any penetration on his kicks or lacks the confidence to be aggressive with his disposal. Luke Brown plays too deep most of the time. So we struggle to get rebound when they sit on Brody Smith. And, you know, we all identified it at before the game that they were going to sit on Brody Smith. They were going to sit on Rory Sloane. That's exactly what happened, and, you know, there was no surprises with any of that, no attempt to counter it, which is where we needed to have maybe Cameron behind the play, you know. But so you would think that Seedsman needs to come back in. I would suggest that you need Chaney to come back in as well.
Seed should come in for McKay, in my opinion.
Well, that, yeah, absolutely, because David McKay is the obvious alternative rebounding player But he just doesn't do it. He's not effective enough. He hasn't got the speed to break the lines. He doesn't have the disposal to be effective. And he hasn't got the strength to break through a hard press. And, you know, if he's getting selected because a lack of personnel, then I can kind of understand that. But there's an underlying issue there that we've persisted with David for a long, long time now. And the fact that he is now the last man standing for that kind of role really is an indictment on our lack of blooding other players into that role. We've got a few. We've got Harry Wigg in the twos. We've got Jordan Gallucci coming through. You know, we did have other players that have been moved on over the last few years. And the fact that it's still DMACC is just so frustrating. Anyway.
Yeah, that's a very good point, though, because once again, I saw the figures published in the paper or in an article somewhere. We've used, I think, 29 players, whereas, you know, Geelong and the Bulldogs have used in the 30s, mid-30s. And so they're finding out about their players. And we've got a lot of players, again, in the twos that we don't know how they're going to go if they get a game.
Yep. Well, we've got Riley Knight to come back in. I think he needs his best 22 for us. I think Kirtley Hampton, you know, obviously probably won't play again this season, or if he does, will be very late. Highly doubtful, though. He's our best 22. We need Seedsman back in, I believe. We need Cheney back in, I believe, as well. If we want a defensive forward to run with a guy like an Andrew Mackie, who could have done with a bit of more attention on Friday night, then I think Troy Menzel's the man for that role. I think defensively he works pretty well. He's not that effective offensively at the moment, but I think he's physical and he's got good tackling skills. So, I mean, we do have players there, but for the second year in a row, you quite rightly point out, Macca, we have used under 30 players. We're the second lowest, players in the AFL, I think. Equal with, I reckon it might even be Port for players. And there's been a lot of discussion on the big footy boards about Harrison Wigg and the fact that, you know, he should be knocking that door down to get selected. My view is that after being on the list for 2.5 years and not being given an opportunity despite some pretty consistent performances in the SANFL, including a 38 disposal game 2 weeks ago, if I was Harrison Wigg, I could be excused, I think, for being pretty disillusioned with the club.
Well, it's hard to argue against that, isn't it? I mean, he can't do any more. Greenwood kept belting the door down and smashing it down.
Greenwood only got selected because of injury, though, Macca, don't forget.
No, I know, but at least when he put the performances there, so when they looked for somebody, he got in.
Yep, but only because we needed an inside midfielder. But I think the one that Harry Wigg would have been disappointed about was Gallucci getting a run ahead of him as another outsider. I think Harry would have been rightly eyeing that spot. And
I was really surprised about that, actually.
Yeah, me too. Because Gallucci hadn't put in the numbers to get selected. And I actually think that Wigg's card has been stamped, because from memory, I don't even think he's being included in the emergencies over the last few weeks.
Yeah, but they must play him. You know, to be fair, they must give him a game somewhere during the season.
No, they won't. They won't. He's cooked. They won't play him, Macca.
I'm afraid you're right, but, you know, sensibly they should.
It's too far. We hold on to our players for far too long. You know, VB, we held on for far too long. Matty Wright, you know, at the moment, David McKay, there's been others. We probably gave Scotty Thompson a season too long. And it's at the expense of these young lads. And, you know, you've got to understand that these young lads want a 10-year AFL career. And if they're sitting in the twos in Adelaide, particularly as a Victorian kid, not that Harry is, he's a South Australian, but for some of these kids that have come from interstate, they're sitting in the twos, you know, putting in good numbers and not getting selected at the expense of some blokes where I'm sure they would look at the TV watching guys like VB in his last couple of seasons and DMACC, and those blokes, and go, geez, if I can't break into this team ahead of those blokes, what am I doing here?
Well, there's been three blokes that basically in the twos, for the benefit of AC, that have really knocked up numbers virtually all year. And Greenwood was one of them, Wiggs another one, and Jono Beach is the other one.
Yep.
So those three players should have played by now. Now, Greenwood has shown that when he's been given the opportunity, and he dominated the clearances in the last quarter. He dominated them. He ended up with 9 clearances.
Yep.
And, I mean, he was out. I thought he was outstanding in the last quarter, and he's had his chance, and he's shown that he can do it. Now, the other two boys, they've been knocking up some very similar numbers, and they should be given a chance as well.
Yep. Well, Jono Beach is the one that I think is desperately unlucky because he's essentially a like-for-like for Mitch McGovern. Perhaps not as talented or dynamic as Mitch McGovern, but he offers a lot of the similar stuff that we need from that role. He can lead up and play quite high. He's good overhead. He kicks the ball really well, and he's got good physicality. Now, you know, there's a reason McGovern's in ahead of him because McGovern's overall a better player, but if you ever wanted an understudy for that role, it's Jono Beach. And why didn't he get selected? I just don't understand. I mean, Otten kind of worked for us when Jenkins was down, but why the hell did they pick Daniel Menzel when Jono Beach was the obvious choice for that role?
Yeah, I can't argue with you.
Well, they're not, you know, the only thing that I would say is that they're not going to put some of these guys in a game at Geelong against a team like Geelong. I mean, they're going to, you would think that they would want to bring those guys in against the Brisbans, the Carltons, those types of teams. They're not going to do it against Geelong.
No, that's correct. Absolutely right, AC. But I guess the point is that had they introduced and blooded some of those players in the second half of last season after the bye when we had those run of easy games for 3 or 4 games, then it wouldn't have been such a risk to bring them in a game against Geelong.
I can't argue with that. I mean, I can't argue with that.
Yeah,
right.
That's the knock, I think. You know, it is a risk to take untried players into such a big game. The fact is that we're not managing our list well enough to give to put games into those guys so that when we do need to call on them, we can do so with some degree of confidence instead of it being completely speculative. Oh, anyway, we could go on and on, I reckon, but we're nearly at an hour and a quarter and I'm just starting to get annoyed again.
Now, just on the game now, Hawkins gave Matty Crouch a bit of a knuckle sandwich, you know, holding on the jumper to disguise it, but he definitely gave him a knuckle sandwich, hit him on the jaw, and it glanced onto his shoulder, so I'm very angry because that is a situation. Now, every coach normally says, well, I didn't see it, or we'll just leave that to the match committee to work out. But we've got Buddy Chris Scott standing there at his press conference saying that he should not be getting suspended at all, and he may be a fine at best but or nothing. And then we've got the player come out today, and he's saying what he's what he did and what he should get as a result. He's saying I should get a $1,500 fine.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not for them to talk about it. It's for them to bloody go up there and find out what they get.
It's utterly out of order for Tom Hawkins to be saying anything. And it's highly unusual for a coach to come out and say anything. And Geelong have this ingrained sense of entitlement when it comes to things like this. They do it with the umpiring. Joel Selwood is a classic for whinging and crying about the umpiring when he starts getting done for, you know, ducking and all that sort of stuff. And the simple fact is that Tom Hawkins has got form. And not only should he get a game, but he should have actually been paid a free against Macca. That was the thing that annoyed me the most. It was right in front of an umpire, and it was high contact, off the ball, immediate free kick. You're just not allowed to do it in football, so why didn't the umpire pay a free kick?
He should be stood down, the umpire, because that was when you see the vision, the camera's got him perfectly lined up about 5-8 metres away at most, yep, looking at it, and he did nothing.
And I'll bet you AC's annual salary, which I understand is quite substantial.
Yeah, right.
He's a lucky man. He's a lucky man.
I bet you AC's annual salary that if Matt Crouch had retaliated, or Brad Crouch come in and retaliated in a similar fashion, it would have been a free kick to Geelong in the goal square. I almost guarantee it.
No question. And the other thing is, they were the beneficiary, and we didn't talk about this, but I thought it was certainly a momentum changer. I think it was in the first quarter, might have been early second, where they took a mark outside the line. I mean, I understand I'm not as nuanced as you guys with it, but he clearly took the mark outside the boundary line. They let him play on, and they got a goal out of that.
Yeah,
correct.
That was a big momentum changer there.
Yeah. That was very, very, very hurtful, that one, that particular goal.
I felt what killed us, despite the free kick count being quite even, what really made it difficult in the first and second quarter in particular was the non-frees that were paid. Incorrect disposal, like, unbelievable. The amount of times that Joel Selwood and some of the others in the Geelong camp, when they get tackled, they don't actually just let the ball go. They actually thrust the ball to a teammate. It's incorrect disposal. You know, there's one thing for a ball to be knocked out in the tackle, but to thrust the ball, not handball it, but basically throw it, but it's more of a push to a teammate, that's incorrect disposal every time.
And that's something that's been, at least I've seen, go on for a number of games. I mean, that's more a league-wide issue, and guys are finding out that umpires are reluctant or inconsistent about calling that, so they're going to try to get away with it.
And they're getting away with it.
They are. Exactly. And it's turning the game into bloody rugby.
No, they're rugby passes at the moment.
Yeah, and I know we want the game to flow and all the rest of it, but rules are rules are rules. And why would you tackle somebody? Because when you tackle somebody, you're committed to that physical contest. And what happens is that then you're basically out of the play if the ball spills free. And if players are allowed to just nudge the ball away to the advantage of a teammate, then we're going to come to a point where players don't want to tackle anymore, because they're either going to get done for a high one because someone's going to shrug the tackle high, or they're not going to get rewarded for a good tackle, A, because the bloke's about allowed to do a 360 turn looking for a teammate, or B, he's allowed to just nudge the ball into the path of a teammate, you know, whilst everyone else is committed to where the contest is. Why would you tackle?
Well, we certainly followed that line because I thought our tackling was atrocious at the time.
We'd stick one.
You know, seriously, you mentioned a very good tackle by Dangerfield where he half killed McKay.
Yeah, he did it twice.
Yeah, he really ragdolled him. And then yet, when it was time to tackle Dangerfield, you see these feeble little hands go out. Not a whole body and arms and trying to wrap him up, but little kiddie's hands go out and he just brushes them aside. I mean, it's just not good enough. And Atkins is very guilty of that too.
I'll tell you something that I noticed, the difference between our tackling technique and Geelong's. And it's the reason why Geelong gets so many high frees, because they're able to shrug the tackles up high. When we tackle with both arms, right? But one of two things happen. We either don't pin the arms, which happened quite frequently on Friday night, in which case they could just, you know, get free and dish off a handball. But when we do happen to pin the arms, we're tackling with two arms straight away, so two arms simultaneously, which means that when you're tackling with two hands, you no longer have any leverage, so it's very easy to shrug the arms up. What Geelong do when they tackle with one arm first and then wrap the other arm around. It's a two-pronged tackle. And to me, that when you think about that process, Macca, you play the game, so you understand what I'm talking about. If someone tackles you with their left arm first and then comes around with the right afterwards, you can't shrug that tackle high, can you?
I know what you're getting at, and it's a horrible feeling when you've got that second one coming to pin you.
Yeah, whereas if you're tackled both arms simultaneously, generally it's less powerful because there's no force. But like, it's very hard to clamp two arms around someone when you're both moving. So, and secondly, the tackler doesn't have as much strength in that. It's hard to explain, without demonstrating it, and I'm sitting here waving my arms around, but like it just seems to me that it's much easier to shrug a tackle high when their two arms go around it simultaneously, whereas I notice with Geelong the way they tackle, when they're trying to tackle someone who's got momentum, it's one arm first to stop the momentum, and then the other arm comes around afterwards to wrap them up. And under those circumstances, it's very hard to shrug that high.
They put the one arm across the front, and then, as you say, the other one comes around. But I think the two-arm tackle is only really should only be applicable if you can get the body there as well.
Exactly.
Because then you've got everything to wrap them up with. But and well, you know, and McKay, Atkins, Miller, they tackle with hands, and they, you know, just arms coming out, but no body, and so they just knock their arms away.
Yeah. Anyway, look, as a final comment from me, and you guys can have a turn, extremely disappointing. It was the game that we've all been looking forward to in terms of being the real indicator of where we sit in the pecking order, and we were found severely wanting. Very lucky that it wasn't a 40 or 50 point loss, and it appears that the club hasn't benefited from organic growth, doesn't have alternative strategies, and the problems that were apparent during big games last season, in particular the Geelong matches and also the Sydney semi-final, have not been solved. And most worrying for me is there doesn't seem to be any fight in the dog when the going gets tough. And I talked on the footy boards about the Hawthorn line in the game, Sand Macca. At some point, we need, because we're a laughingstock in the comp now, we're weak as piss to every other team. Every other team knows that you bring the heat against Adelaide and they'll fall over. At some point, the Adelaide Football Club, collectively and as a playing group, has to draw a line in the sand. And I don't care if we go out against St Kilda next week and if they bring the heat. I don't care if we get six suspensions. I really couldn't give a shit. I'm just sick and tired of watching us bend over whenever a team decides that they want to bring the heat.
Well, we'd be lucky to have had six suspensions in your lifetime.
Yeah, that's true. And when we do get a suspension, someone trots out a DVD. Like Neil Craig.
Oh, no. Oh, no, that was one of the most stupid things ever. No. Yeah. That was terrible.
Yeah. It's starting to become a little embarrassing to barrack for this football club. And I know we're only supporters and, you know, it's quite dangerous, just our hobby. But nevertheless, you want the team to win, and you want them to, if they're not going to win, to put in an effort. I would have been happy with a 22-point loss if we'd fought it down to the wire from start to finish. The only reason we got that close was because they took the foot off the pedal. And it was a pathetic performance, as Squibby points out in the chat, and insipid. And I'm tired of seeing those performances whenever the heat is brought.
Well, you know, I don't know whether you watched the GWS game at all. I watched it, and I admired that Jake Kelly. He is one of the most phenomenal footballers. Josh Kelly, sorry. One of the most phenomenal footballers I've seen. They try to tag him, but he just keeps moving and moving and moving. And he ends up with, you know, like a dozen tackles himself. He's 38
possessions at like 80%.
Like no, 90 something percent.
Yeah, he's an absolute machine. And they're all talking about Martin for the Brownlow. He's got to be a real smoky for the Brownlow, I reckon, Josh Kelly.
One of the best footballers I've seen is a pure footballer for so long.
Yeah,
this guy's got it all.
He's better than Ablett.
Better than Ablett. He's just got it all. They needed a goal to get the lead, and he's taken a mark, and he's 45, 50 metres out. And he just slots it as coolly. He's like ice. He's just brilliant.
Yeah, great player.
And he's on the market, and I'll tell you what, we should make a play. We won't get him, but I'd love us to get him. Wouldn't it be great to get a player like that?
Yep, we won't. We won't even try. AC, what are your final thoughts, mate?
Just that our worst fears were realized. The midfield was identified as an area that we would have trouble with here, and unfortunately, against the better squads, it certainly seems to be the case.
He's got it right. Yeah, he's got it right.
No surprises at all. Okay, well, look, we'll leave it there. We're obviously going to have a big session on Tuesday night with Tuesday Night Live. Lots to talk about, obviously. There'll be some fallout from this game. And, yes, no Thursday night, but I'd imagine that the following Tuesday night of the bye, we're going to have a bit of a roundup and a half-year review. So thanks, everyone, for joining us tonight. Thanks, Macca and AC, for joining us, and also Peter J. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at AFL Crowcast. If you're listening on iTunes, you can give us a review and a like rating on iTunes. And we will see you on Tuesday night. Thanks, guys.
Pleasure, and I'd love to see AC around again. He's good company.
Absolutely. Thanks, mate.
Cheers, mate.